All right, welcome everybody. This is Hank Alexander, the Midnight Ride, sitting here with Stephen Storr for another lunch break podcast at the beautiful scenic Bark and Crab, downtown Boston, Massachusetts. Summer's here, man. Good stuff.
It's hot.
Yeah, it is hot. It's hot. But it's not so hot in the Reds locker room right now. It's at least from the casual fans' perspective, you look at this team and you got to say, what the hell's going on?
True.
Especially from the front office perspective. I think that's what we're going to talk about today, is that over the last couple of weeks, we've had some questions and answers kind of posed to members of the front office. Some very good questions, some tired, old, rehashed questions that they've answered on many occasions. And we've got some good answers from Brian Bilello, but we've got some tired and rehashed answers as well from Mike Burns. And somebody, you know, on there said, you know, the reason why we keep asking this question is because we're tired of the same old answers and we want another answer. So, you know, let's discuss that, because the big thing about the whole issue, and why don't you tell me, because you really got into this. You wrote a great article on Revs ASN about this, AmericanSoccerNews.net, about the lack of information coming forth. So why don't you go ahead and get us started on it.
The problem was, when I read his responses to the questions, I immediately recognized not just the same theme, but verbatim the same answers that Burns gave to a lot of the questions at the Supporters Summit earlier this year in February, especially pertaining to designated players. People are asking, you know, are we going to get a DP signing in pretty soon? And Mike made the comment, you know, we get this question by far the most often. Well, duh, Mike. I mean, the Red Bulls just signed their second and on the way to their third. Rumors are that LA is going to get Ronaldinho for their second. Where are we in this? You know, we've been talking about it, and it's the same answer every time. Has to be a guy that works on the field and off the field, both for a play standpoint and a marketing standpoint, and the community. That doesn't make sense. I understand in the past that they've talked to Pauleta and to Luis Figo, Portuguese national stars. You know, that would be big for the Portuguese base here. But unfortunately, most of the Portuguese immigrants in this area don't go to Revs games because they can't get to Foxborough.
Right.
So if you're really going to look for something that's going to improve on and off the field, improve the product on the field. Winning will bring an improved product off the field. To me, that's the way sports marketing just works.
Right.
And the problem was that he used the same, we're looking for the player on and off the field, and then he went in, and when someone asked about the process of acquiring players, I'm pretty sure they were thinking along the lines of, you know, how do we scout, what do we have to go through as far as allocation and where we are in that, like, weird draft system that comes in for entering players and stuff like that. And instead, he went over and he said, well, we have a committee of people who look over a player's performance, and then we can either loan them or sign them, or we can draft players.
Oh, boy. That's just a wealth of information.
I was insulted.
Yeah.
I honestly felt like my intelligence was insulted. Anybody who follows American sports knows how a draft works. And anybody who knows anything about soccer knows that you can loan or sign players at any other time. And you don't need to be a soccer fan to figure out what that means just by reading it. He didn't answer anything. And if you look on the post on the Revs blog where all these answers came out, I'm not the only one. There's 80 plus comments talking about how much of a joke everything that he said was, and how it just proves that the organization is going nowhere. Contrast that to Brian Bilello, who the week before finally admitted something concrete about the stadium situation and said they were re-examining the Somerville location, because now telling us that the big issue was the train maintenance yard. I had written about this earlier too. It would have helped if at the time they could have told us that they were putting it on hold because they didn't know what was going to happen with the train yard. That would have been cool. But they didn't, so we were confused. And now, I mean,
yeah.
I think our waiter's trying to take our look at us for a minute. But all right,
but you know, it comes down to the whole thing about playing the. You made a comment earlier. We were talking about playing the cards too close to the vest here, and how this has come back to burn them in big time in the PR department. Especially, you know, you go back to last season, the off season. You know, they lose Brad Knighton in the expansion draft. And, you know, at the time we were all like, well, that's too bad, because we thought I thought he was a good backup keeper and a prospect for the future. And then it turns out Matt Reese is going on the DL because he's got two surgeries. I don't know. So, but they protected Matt Reese. You know, that just seemed to me like a dumb idea. Bad personnel decision move, because if you put it out in the media that Matt Reese is injured, he's going to have surgery. He's going to miss half the season. There's no way a team that needs a goalie is going to pick up an aging Matt Reese and wait until June. No way. And so instead they lose Brad Knighton in the expansion draft, which, you know, on the premise that nobody's going to draft a backup goalkeeper. And yet Philadelphia Union did. And so Brad Knighton's sitting on the bench in Philadelphia. And we had to make a trade to get and ended up losing Jeff Larenowitz in the process. And who knows if Jeff Larenowitz would have re-signed with the Revolution. He was out of contract. He was looking to go elsewhere. I think he wanted a change. Now I'm beginning to wonder, it's like, well, you know what, maybe there's something with his team, and maybe it's the AstroTurf, and maybe it's the administration, or the field turf, or whatever it is, not AstroTurf, but the artificial turf, and maybe it's just playing here in Foxborough, and maybe it's something in this organization that guys just don't want to play here. And you get into this whole idea about trying to acquire a designated player. You look at somebody like Ronaldinho maybe going to Los Angeles, and you wonder why he wouldn't come to, why the Revolution wouldn't make a play for a guy like Ronaldinho, who, if you've ever been to a Brazil match in Foxborough Stadium, the Brazilians come out of the woodwork and flock to every single game whenever the Brazil national team comes here. If you bring a guy like Ronaldinho into Foxborough, you're guaranteed increasing your 10,000 seats sold every game, a minimum.
Shirt sales.
Shirt sales will go through the roof. I mean, it's just ridiculous why they're not even looking at that. So you get back to what Mike Burns is doing, and you have to wonder, what is he doing in his job what is he not doing in his job that is making this team ineffective on the field because they don't have the quality personnel to play in these games or compete, or they're not keeping up with the Joneses. You look at our Eastern Conference rivals, our biggest Eastern Conference rivals. You look at New York, they've acquired their second designated player. At least D.C. United, they're bringing in guys as DPs. But, you know, they may not be huge names, but at least they're bringing in a DP. They're doing it. They're making the effort. You know, Houston, they're not an in-conference rival, but they're a rival. You know, they're at least trying. They signed Landine. They just let him go. It didn't work out. But they were not afraid to make that move.
Landine's significant because he was a departure from the previous image of a DP, which was an older, aging European superstar or South American superstar, kind of on the downswing, but still good enough to make a difference. Landin, 24, 25 years old, successful in the Mexican League, an up-and-coming Mexican national team striker. Nobody could have expected that he liked all-you-can-eat buffets a lot more than he liked training. But, I mean, yes, it's a failure, but they'll rebound from that. And I really hope people pay attention to Dominic Kinnear's line of reasoning with that and try to use it more, because that's going to be the future of the designated player in MLS.
That's what it is. That's what it should be.
Because Dom is thinking not, I need to get something that's going to improve the product off the field. I'm sure Landine did for a short time at least. There are a lot of Mexican people in Texas. I'm sure that made a difference. But Landine was meant to improve the product on the field first, much the same way that Luciano Emilio was at DC.
Right.
And you know what? Emilio did.
Yes.
And if Landine did, Kinnear would have known that the improved success would improve the gate.
Yes.
Would improve the team's standing, because at the bottom line, and especially here in Boston, we love winners. With the exception of the Red Sox, who we love even when they suck. But nobody paid attention to the Patriots when they weren't good.
Right.
Nobody paid attention to the Bruins before recently when they got good again.
Yep.
Nobody paid attention to the Celtics before they got good again. I mean, we still rooted for them, but nobody went to the games.
Right.
When they start to win in Boston, we start to pay attention.
Yes.
And people are losing focus on the Revs because they're not winning anymore.
Nope.
And they're not winning anymore because we haven't done a single good, new, exciting, or beneficial thing for the team since, what, 05?
At least. I mean, you go back to what really sparked this team was to greatness. In starting in 2000, you bring in Steve Nicholas, was an assistant coach at the time. They bring him over. Things started to change there. They got
Twellman
in 2001, 2002 time frame. I think it was 2002.
Yeah.
And they just started lighting it up, and they went on this huge run. Right now, the Revolution are in danger of missing out on the playoffs. But,
For the first time in, I think, 9 or 10 years.
Yeah. They are the only franchise in the Boston area that has made it successfully into the playoffs. No other team has made it more successfully in the playoffs as many times in a row. It's the longest consecutive streak ever. But anyway, back to the whole thing about the designated player and what Mike Burns is doing. Now, you come back out and you look at Bob Kraft has just recently come out in the paper about some his commitment to the team, the Kraft family commitment to the team. And, they were down on the Cape, in their house on the Cape, watching the World Cup final and blah, 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 and saying how, how this is great for soccer. And when he was back in 94, they had a great World Cup exposure in Foxborough. And that's great for 1994, Bob. That's fantastic. What are we doing now? We'd love to get the World Cup back here in the United States, but what are you going to do for the Revolution? You need to pony up the cash. You need to start making, these decisions and, go out, make a commitment, bring in a player that's going to improve the product on the field, make some offers. You might have to make a ridiculous offer. You might have to get a shirt sponsor for who, God knows, whatever reason. The Boston Breakers, the female team, now have a shirt sponsor with Foxwoods. I mean,
why couldn't we do that?
They're probably not getting anything from it, except, Foxwoods is getting free advertising, but it's a shirt sponsor, and it's the right thing in the right time. You probably get a little, and you probably have some exhibition games down at Foxborough.
Well, they're definitely paying the Breakers something. I mean, the MLS has the minimum of $500K a year.
Paying the uniforms.
Yeah. The MLS has the $500K a year minimum. You can tell me Mohegan Sun can't pony up $500K a year for that?
Nobody wants to spend $500K to be
a
shirt sponsor?
No, I mean, I understand that only 12,000, 13,000 people go to the games, but it's advertising.
Yeah. Sam Adams. Hello? Harpoon Beer. Have you talked to these guys? Local Boston businesses that want to attract a all-male crowd? I mean, come on. But anyway,
let's ease up on the all-male crowd here.
Predominantly male, mid-30s to 40s, 20s to 40s demographic there.
Hoover Dam's going to crucify you for saying
that. Well, yeah, I know. Sorry, Prairie. But anyway, the upshot is the Revs, and specifically the front office, are not making the right moves. And we need to do something. They need to do something, or this team is going to go the way of the dodo. And people are going to just stop going to the games.
We're going
to
become irrelevant.
And we are irrelevant.
We are now, but there's still passion here, but we're going to lose it.
And you bring up a good point. So, the passion, I think, is there on the field.
Would you like another ice tea?
Coca-Cola, thanks. The passion's obviously there on the field. I mean, the Revolution, despite the fact that they don't have a quality forward that Zach Schalowski can link up with, other than Kelly Dubé, so I leave him out because I said quality forward. But Schalowski is a rookie. He's new to this league. It's a lot more physical. It's a lot more demanding than the college game, and so I think he's getting used to it. It's going to take him a full season, I think, to really get it under his belt.
They should be taking an approach with Schalowski that they took with Crispin, assimilating him a little bit slower, but they can't.
They can't. They
don't
need
have
him.
The depth.
They need him.
And, I mean, even backing up a little bit from a personnel standpoint, back to, being angry with Burns' responses as opposed to being excited about Bolello's, the major issue that I see there is transparency. And we were talking about this earlier. It's the Kraft seem like they are dead set on playing their cards as close to their chest as possible and not telling anyone anything that's going on. How does that work? How does that help keep a fan base satisfied? People love the Patriots right now, but they're doing the same damn thing. And I think part of it for them is Belichick's ego. But remember in the Pete Carroll days, people were pissed at the Krafts, and the Krafts at first tried to lean back on saying, well, we saved the team from moving to St. Louis, or we saved the team from this, or that, and the other. Great. We're happy for you. Now, make it better or get out.
Right. And so you end up, but, I think this is a carryover from the...
What I was going to say to that was, I mean, the Crafts seem to point back and say that they've invested so much money. I was talking to Frank Del Apple about this, the guy who does soccer for the Globe. By the way, stand-up guy, terrific writer, always responsive on Twitter and talks to me and stuff like that. Really great guy. I just want to get that out there. But he said, you know, people have to remember that the Crafts put in all this money and brought soccer here and kept it here when it looked like it was going to die everywhere else. Listen, nobody appreciates that more than me or the rest of us.
Right.
Okay, we all remember that. We all know that. We all remember what it was like when you couldn't watch soccer in the United States. And we all remember what it was like when the Reds first got here.
Yep.
Okay? But sports and entertainment is, whether fortunately or unfortunately, a what-have-you-done-for-me-lately business. It is results-based. The results are not there. The Crafts are resting on their laurels and don't seem to be willing to move forward. And if they are willing to move forward, they're not telling us. Tell us that you bid for a designated player and failed.
Yes.
Tell us that you've been looking in this place and that place for these things. Don't go scouting on dirt pitches in Africa. Don't pull somebody out of the Chicago Storm in the PDL and think that he can help us today, because he can.
Right.
And he probably won't help us tomorrow. Steve Nichol has a great track record with draft picks, but the Revs don't have a good track record with much else in the last 5 years or so.
Not at all. And, you know, the draft, you know, draft aside, you look at the player acquisitions that they brought in. It's been terrible. It's been horrific, actually. You look at Padilla, Castro, Jankowskis. We can go on here. It's Nayuki. Mansali was, you know, and it's been, he's still, you know, kind of a project, but he's been with the league for 3 years, 15, 16 minutes. So it's been going on for a while now. This has been a trend. Yeah, we got lucky with the draft. We got lucky when we got Steve Ralston. We got lucky when we got Jay Heaps. We got lucky when we got Taylor Twellman. You know, because these guys were all, like, part of the expansion drafts or re-entry drafts or whatever. I mean, Taylor Twellman was playing in
Germany,
and he came back in and through the draft.
Re-entry draft again.
In 2001 or whatever it was. And we got very, very lucky there. And you look at some of these other guys that we drafted, and some have stuck. You know, we got Jeff Lorenowitz in supplemental. That was a find. It was a real find.
Yep.
But then, you know, you look at some of these other guys that have been kind of flops. They just haven't worked out the way they thought they would. You know, maybe they were best available on the board kind of situations. But, you know, I know that for a fact that for some reasons Steve Nichol went after Pat Phelan for whatever reason. Anyway, we're digressing. We go back on to, you know, bringing in somebody now that's going to improve the product on the field now. And that's a designated player environment. You need to... You're looking at somebody who's going to come in, preferably somebody who can hold up the ball as a forward and score some goals, because that's where this team needs a lot of help right now. Maybe a right-sided player, somebody who can drop back and play right midfield to give some cover there, because right, you know, with the injuries that this team right now, you look at Sandy Nyasi is the only really fully functional right wing that we have.
Yep.
Zach Boggs is injured. Well, he's got a concussion, so hopefully he'll be back soon. Steve Ralston's recovering. These guys can play right side, but they're not healthy right now. And so you need anywhere else. You look at the rest of the team, we've got a ton of left-sided midfielders and forwards. You know, Mansali, Tierney, Perovic.
Kano Smith,
if he's injured. But if he comes back, he could be the guy. But he's a guy that maybe you look at that. But so you got to bring in a designated player, period. Improve the product on the field. Now you bring up the topic of bringing somebody in. You have to make a roster move. And let's talk about this. This is always fun because you get a few minutes where you can digress as to who would you get rid of in order to make room for a designated player. We played this game before, and I like this game.
The list is long. Kano Smith and Joseph Nyuki would be at the top of my list. Nyuki specifically at the top of my list. Granted, I will say that against L.A., he looked a lot better than he has in the past. He wasn't flying into stupid tackles. He was still positionally lost, but he wasn't flying into stupid tackles. He actually delivered one really good pass that didn't amount to anything, but it wasn't his fault at all. And he seemed to settle down and realize, I'm going to get the ball, and I'm going to pass it to Shaw Rigg. I'm going to get the ball, and I'm going to pass it to Shaw Rigg. I'm going to get the ball, and I'm going to pass it to Shaw Rigg.
Yeah.
Instead of saying, I'm going to get the ball, and I'm going to stay on it, then I'm going to lose it, and then I'm going to tackle the guy from behind.
You can remember, he came in as a substitute in that game for Jason Griffiths, who
I thought was playing
apparently it was
pretty well.
I actually missed the first 25 minutes of that game, so I missed all of Griffin's play.
He apparently had, in the first 5 minutes, he had two really hard fouls, either of which could have been a yellow card.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Which is what when he played in the exhibition game against Benfica. He played in that game, too, and he played the same way, fouled in the first minute of play. Which is, to me, a sign that he's aggressive and he wants to put his stamp on the game, which is great.
It's a rookie mentality, and that's acceptable from a rookie. And it seemed like...
Not afraid to mix it
up. I felt like Schalke... I mean, in the LA game, they used Schalke as a target man as much as a midfielder. Whenever they got possession, they would keep it in the back for a minute, pass it along the defense, let Schalke get forward, and then lump it up to him, using him as a target man. Yeah. That was a phenomenal idea. And it worked out because in the second half, when you finally had Shalowski and Dubé like anticipating runs and flick-ons, we scored goals. We created opportunities. Because we didn't score goals from any of those opportunities, but we were creating chances.
Right.
That was good. And in the beginning, we started out doing that very early on, and Griffiths was key. Because I think Schalke really felt confident that he could move forward early, knowing that Griffiths was just going to patrol 4 yards in front of the back four, clean everything up, and pass it forward.
Which is what Larenowitz used to do. That's exactly what Larenowitz started.
That's what Francino used to do when we had him there, when we played the five-man midfield, and that allowed Schalke to play the possession game.
Yep.
And Griffiths never looked uncomposed when he was on the ball. Yep. There were times when he looked uncomposed in the tackle.
Yep.
But he never looked uncomposed on the ball. And when Niuki came into the game, it took until the second half, I think, for Schalke to really feel confident again. Because Niuki actually played an okay game against LA.
He was much more conservative. And I think that, he probably went in and said, look,
one terrible tackle that he got carded for.
Yeah, but and he's going to get one yellow card a game for the rest of his career, guaranteed. But he's already been suspended because of yellow card accumulation once, so you got to figure that out.
And because of getting a red card.
Right. And he got a red card, too. He's missed a couple games there. He doesn't want to miss anymore, or many more, and I think that's starting. You look at the game against the Pumas in Superliga the other night, he was awful.
Terrible.
Three fouls in the first 6 minutes of play for Niuki, and he was terrible.
And he ended up getting a yellow card and then pulled for Phelan, who...
Yep.
He really wants to play because he was all over the field elbowing Shalowski in the head, running into the referee and falling over.
Yep. Punching everybody.
Yep. Although I really wish that he had that one hard tackle from behind where he got ball and didn't get called.
Yeah.
Probably should have got called and then got hip checked.
Yeah.
I wish he went after the guy. I don't care if everybody got red card, but he lost the match.
Dude.
He should have gone after that guy and just dropped that guy.
But he's another guy that, if they had to bring in a DP, I would put him on top of my list. I don't think Nickel would.
I wouldn't because my voice is cracking a little bit. I wouldn't because...
Puberty sucks.
It happens. He's versatile. He's not good at either, particularly MLS good at either position, but he can play holding mid and he can play central defense.
Yeah.
And considering
did better at center defense.
Yeah. Considering all the injuries we have had, I don't want to let somebody with that kind of versatility go.
Absolutely right.
I'd rather get rid of Connor Smith, who has shown that he can't play anywhere or do anything. I'd rather get rid of
Joseph Yuki,
who plays one position and plays it terribly. Although I really wanted to get a goal before he leaves, because he's unleashed a couple of pile drivers in the games that he's played in that have come inches. I'd love to see him score one wonder goal, then we could drop him. But,
If he scores one wonder goal, he's probably guaranteed to be dropped. who'd want to keep somebody that can score? Look at guys like, I'd rather see Kevin Olsen score a goal any day of the week.
Oh, yeah.
He had a great setup the other night, actually, where he was running onto the goal, and all it would have taken was, I think it was Nyasi, or maybe it was Dubé, I'm not sure, but a threaded pass to him, he was on goal, one-on-one with the keeper, and it would have had it.
Nyasi's decision-making on Wednesday was typically suspect.
Yeah.
He had a couple of really good plays and a couple of really terrible ones.
Yep.
I thought it was especially one moment when he dribbled to, did really well to get to the byline.
Yep.
And he was just spoiled for choice in the middle. And I think he got so overwhelmed that he ended up just taking a shot from an impossible angle.
He should have just
corner kick. He should have just even if it's a bad pass, just put it across.
And then the next play, he put it across when he should have taken the shot.
Yep.
Yeah. So I remember that. But yeah, so you want to?
He's still young.
So let's go back. Niuki gone. He'll be Connell Smith gone. Jankowskis gone.
I I forgot that he even existed.
Yeah, I mean, but unfortunately, there's a rule that says, you know, if the guy's injured, you can't get rid of him. You know, people look at Colaluca and say, get rid of Colaluca. I say, why? He's Generation Diaz player. We're not even picking up half of his salary.
Yep.
It's being all paid by somebody else. And in a year, his GA contract will be up anyway, and then he'll be gone. So right now, he's...
I would have liked to see Vidira get a chance on Wednesday.
I would have liked to see Vidira.
He was on the bench. We haven't seen a lot of him.
You got to think that if he starts to play, that maybe...
What we're doing doesn't work.
Yeah.
Give someone else a shot. If he sucks, he sucks. Great, drop him. Fine.
You need a forward.
At least you know.
You need, you know, you got guys that are spent on the front line. You know, put in Vidira up there or something. At least give somebody a spell in the midfield. You also had, I think what Nichol saw was that Marko Perović was getting burned in the, he was getting tired and burned playing more in the midfield than he has recently. Because Pumas was attacking, and he was only back to win some games. So he decided to go more defensive in the second half, and that's why he made that substitution. He brought in Sinovic, moved Tierney up into the midfield.
I would have thought Vidira for Perović would have been a like-for-like move. You could have had Vidira play...
Yep, center, mid.
Well, I mean, they had Nianse come in on the right. So have Vidira drift. Have Vidira play a bit of a free roll or play left. You know, let him be creative, because that's his M.O., isn't it? I mean,
But put Vidira in the midfield, move Shaari to striker. I mean...
See, I never want to do that.
I always want to do that, because he's the best striker we have on the team.
But
right
he's now. Also he's also the very best possession
he's
player.
He's the very best player on the field,
yes,
period.
Yes, yes. And I'd rather have him maintaining possession, because we can have a great striker who gets no service
Absolutely.
And doesn't score, or we can get possession and get opportunities like we did last night, where Perović can score from a free kick, or Nianse can score from a follow-up. And I feel like if you have a really great striker getting no service, you're not going to score. Whereas if you maintain possession...
That was the LA game, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Whereas if you maintain possession and create chances or create dangerous opportunities, eventually something's going to happen.
Right.
So
the thing is, for me, is that Shaari can maintain possession in the attacking third. And that's...
And in the LA game, when they had him bumping up to take the knockdowns, he was playing midfield, but he was moving up. I like that strategy for this team right now,
mm-hmm.
because I feel like you do that in training a little bit more. Shalonsky is smart enough, and enough of a poacher, he's shown.
Yes.
That he'll pick that up.
That's a sweet
he doesn't. He does not, for some reason, possess the ball very well, which I don't have a problem with that of a striker. I don't need a striker that's going to hold up the ball. We have other people that will, and we'll set him up. But I would love to keep seeing him take those knockdowns from Shaari, because he's going to score them eventually.
Yep.
I mean, another acrobatic poacher's goal against Pumas. I know it was off the corner,
awesome.
But it was still really well done. It was that's
right there.
Strikers find the way to score.
Guy didn't see him coming. It was
strikers
great.
Find a way to score when it seems like there's nothing you could do with the ball. That's what good strikers do.
Yep.
And that's what he did.
Yep. So, but yeah, like you said, so Jankauskas, we want to get rid of him. Nayuki, Smith, and we already got rid of Castro. He was one of the guys we picked early in the season when we did our go through the West. But I think you got to get rid of Jankauskas. And, you know, if Vidira, I'd like to see him get a shot. I mean, because we just haven't seen enough of him. But, you know, he's had problems with his ankle. He's been hit or miss. And you think that in a game like Superliga, he would have had a shot at least. He actually played well in Superliga last year. I think he got a red card for a ridiculous call on a very run-of-the-mill kind of shoulder-to-shoulder challenge where he was going up for the ball, came down on top of somebody, and they gave him a straight red. And it's like, what?
Oh, with Waldemaro Toledo officiating
the match? Toledo was officiating the match, I believe.
I hate that guy.
But anyway, yeah, in order to make room for a DP, which they're not going to sign, we need to get rid of somebody that they're not going to cut.
Right.
So it's kind of a fictional what-if kind of scenario. But
you can bring it back to Burns and to everything we were saying before. The most depressing thing about all of this is that everybody we're talking about cutting are all the newest people they've brought in.
Yeah.
Every time they make a new acquisition, it's somebody that we immediately think about cutting.
Right.
Miyuki, we want to cut him. Jankauskas, we want to cut him. Smith, we should never have brought him back in the first place, but we want to cut him. I mean, where are the astute signings?
They're not.
We have squad players who are right now the stars of the team. Guys like Tierney, who gives us all for the team every game. He's not, you know what? He's not a bad player.
He's not the greatest player, but he's not a bad player.
He's also not a guy that should be starting every match.
Yeah.
He should be a guy that you put on the left when your left midfielder needs rest, or on the left back when your left back needs rest, or a guy who's a regular substitute. A guy who sees a lot of minutes but doesn't necessarily see a lot of starts. That's what he should be, and he's not.
If he had... Tierney had one more gear that he could turn on, you know, in terms of speed and awareness and agility.
He does.
He's a very quality with his left foot.
That was your left foot.
This
is the beer, Hank. It's getting me so excited.
It's easy now, killer. But the upshot is that Tierney, if he had that extra level, he's shown the leadership in the locker room and on the field, you know, that he could be captain of this team. If he had a little bit extra quality, just a little bit more, he would be a captain of this team in 2 years. I could see it. But I don't think he's got the quality to make it. I really don't. He works hard. He puts in more hours than anybody else on this team. I'd love to see him develop that extra gear, develop that kind of niche that makes him indispensable to this team. Because right now, he's not. He's not.
Well, I mean, actually, right now, I believe he is indispensable, because if we dispense of him, who the hell are we going to play in his place? he shouldn't be. He should not be an indispensable player. He should be a squad player. And he's not. And that's a problem.
Yeah.
I said earlier, Shalosky should be getting brought along slower, blooded as a rookie. He's instead being thrown into the fire.
Right.
Because it's
Sasinovic. It's apparently, you know, they're trying to rest him as much as possible.
Well, he's good enough that we need, compared to the rest of the team, that we need to play him all the time. Let me tell you something. Sinovic, for me, despite the goals we've gotten from Shalosky, Sinovic has been the best rookie performer we've had. He shut down Dero in that 4-1 win.
Yep.
Shut him down. Dero scored the one goal that Toronto did when he drifted inside and got away from Sinovic, because Sinovic had to stay in position.
Yep.
Not his fault. And he shut one of the best Canadian player ever, probably, and one of the best MLS players ever. Mm-hmm. Completely shut the door on him.
Absolutely.
So,
all right.
That's about all I got. So.
Okay. So let's wrap it up. So I think we can basically say that we're not happy with the situation in the front office. There needs to be some change. I know the call has been, there's actually talk of a petition about getting a petition together, a letter to the front office and the Kraft family, saying that we, the fans of the Revolution, are demanding a better product on the pitch. We demand that they make a meaningful transfer in this 2-week window, or 4-week window, and if at the end of the window, on August 15th, they haven't made a signing, that we demand, that they, this letter demands the resignation of Mike Burns, which will never happen.
No.
But
I feel like I almost don't want to do that, just because I feel like Mike Burns is a nice guy. He played for us, and he played well.
Yep.
And I really don't think he wants it to be this way. I can't imagine anybody except Johnny and Bobby Kraft do.
And that's the point. So you basically got a puppet head figure in there who's just doing whatever the big boss is telling him to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, he said, hey, you know, we'd love to bring in this guy Pauletta, but he wants $8 million. You know, or whatever.
Was also old and over the hill.
Yeah, why would you spend that much money on that guy? It doesn't make sense to me. I'd say spend the money on a young guy who's going to come in. Even Thierry Henry is making a killing. What is it, 15 a year or something? I have no idea.
I don't know.
We don't
need to sign a DP that's going to make $10 million a year.
We need to sign a DP
that's
going to
make
would
be far and away our best player already.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, there you go.
Even though I think Shaw Reed probably deserves that kind of money. Even though he won't get it. And I'm glad he doesn't get it, because it frees up salary cap space for us.
But you got to also look, Shaw Reed's 31, he's getting a little slower.
Right.
But he's still the best guy they got on the field.
Felt so bad for him a couple years ago when Celtic wanted him,
and
we wouldn't let him move.
Nope.
I'm glad we kept him, because it helped us, but I feel bad for him. He deserves that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, that happens, and it's happening a lot with, you know, it's happened a lot with Revolution players. And, you know, they're willing to, you know, hold on to their contracts with really good players for as long as possible, but, you know, the league is set up so that they can't benefit really from a transfer.
You only get, a quarter or a half of the fee or something like
Not even. Not even. They get the salary cap. They get the salary cap money.
I think they get a quarter. I think the new rules is they get a quarter of the fee.
They got a quarter of the fee, but it has to go towards infrastructure first, not towards buying a new player. So what are you going to do? Anyway, all right, let's wrap it up. Mike Burns, you got some work to do. Hope it works out. We got half the season remaining. You got plenty of time to turn this game around. We're, you know, two wins in a row, although one only counts for 3 points in the league. At least we're not on the bottom anymore. All right, so for this edition, check out Midnight Ride podcast. Obviously, if you're listening to Lunch Break, you're going to listen to the Midnight Ride podcast, hopefully. You got Steve Storer is working on all things footies, goal.com, and Revs ASN.
Hank and I are now co-editors and the only contributors for Revs ASN.
It's AmericanSoccerNews.net.
American-Soccer-News.com. We're actually going to discuss some stuff about that in a second, but if you want more information on Burns' answers and Bolello's answers, you can read my reactions to them and link to those articles. The Burns reaction is Diary of a Revs Fan, Intelligence Insulted, and the Bolello reaction is Somerville Time Blues Cured.
Right.
Give those a look. www.atfooty.com. I've contributed 4 articles so far, and Kevin's on my case to contribute another one. I was going to do it last night, but I ran out of things to write about. And I am doing Revs beat writing for goal.com as well. I am done plugging myself and trying to pick myself out. Hank, if you'd like to honk, if you'd like to continue.
just keep listening. Thanks, God, and we'll talk to you guys soon.